Okay, we'll call the meeting to order of the Conference Committee for House File 2738, a photo ID constitutional amendment. Welcome, everybody. Glad you can join us tonight. Very pleased to have you here. I know we have a lot of competition, a very busy place today with all kinds of things going on, but that's the nature of the legislature at this time of year. So we really appreciate our senators being here in the House building. Good to have you here. Welcome. And to our members. So we're going to start out today by having the, we have a report, 2738, the A30 is the language, Senator Newman, and you are wanting to walk through this. And then to let you know, we will take public testimony. This amendment, this language has been released 45 minutes an hour ago, and gotten out to as many people as we could. And also we will take testimony tonight, 30 minutes for each side, pro and con. And so if anybody wishes to sign up for that, we do have a testifier sheet right over here on the corner of the table. We do have Ms. Nowinski there who will take care of that if anybody is interested in that. And I think, is there anything else to announce? Cover those things? Okay. And then I will ask Senator Newman, you have a proposal here and that you're going to be walking us through.
Thank you, Representative Kiffmeyer. To the A30 amendment, this, of course, is the constitutional amendment for photo ID. And Section 1A is current language and simply reiterates the eligibility requirements under our current constitution for purposes of voting. And it deals with issues like a person must be 18 years of age, has to be a U.S. citizen, have to reside in a precinct for 30 days before the election, etc. The new language then begins at Section 1B, which is at line 16. And you will note that we are dividing this bill into two different broad categories, and that would be in-person voters and not in-person voters. 1B deals with in-person voters and will require that they present a valid government-issued photographic identification before receiving a ballot. And we are also making a provision that if a voter, an eligible voter, does not have a photographic identification in a form that complies with this constitutional amendment, then the state must provide them with that identification. And that language is in there specifically to avoid any kind of an allegation of a poll tax. On line 19, a voter must be able to, or must prevent the photographic identification, and if they're not able to, the voter is still going to be entitled to cast a vote, and that would be a provisional ballot. And the provisional ballot then will be counted only if the voter later, in a manner prescribed by the legislature, certifies the valid and proves that it the voter was an eligible voter for that particular precinct. We then go into paragraph C, and that includes all voters, and there you will notice the language that includes all those not voting in person. And the intent of paragraph C is to encompass all voters. That would be voters in person and not in person voters, and states that everyone who is going to vote must be subject to substantial equivalent identity and eligibility verification prior to being a ballot being cast that or counted. And that could take into consideration, for instance, someone who comes in and does not have the necessary photo ID, but nevertheless would be able to cast a vote and would be allowed to register on the same day. But the vote wouldn't be counted on that day. It would be counted at a later date. Section 2 involves the submission to the voters, and what it indicates is that this amendment, if approved by the voters in the 2012 general election, would be effective July 1st, 2013 for all elections that will be conducted November 5th, 2013 and thereafter. Then finally, beginning at line 31, you will see the actual question that is going to be submitted to the voters on the ballot in 2012. And then if you flip over the page on page 2.1 through 3, that is the title of the bill, photo identification required for voting. And that, Representative Kiffmeyer, is a brief explanation as to the proposed constitutional amendment. And at your pleasure, I will offer the A30 whenever you wish me to do so, or we can proceed with questions or testimony.
Thank you, Senator Newman. I think that this has been a good combination of it's two one-page bills that had the same concepts, just worded a little bit differently, and some of the phrases, like you said, in person or not in person, and some of the language that the House had, nonetheless being put together in one conference committee report. And Senator Newman, I think this is a pretty good job. But I think what I would like to do is enable folks to come testify, and that are on the list. I want to make sure we give them an opportunity to come and give their thoughts. And Ms. Nowinski, you might want to give me the list, and then okay, we'll start with the opponents, or those who have concerns, as Representative Greg Davids always says, that we have concerns. We aren't opponents per se, but whatever you wish to describe it at. And so I have Representative Steve Smith.
Simon,
sorry. It's actually written down, Steve Smith. No, it's written down, Steve Smith, so sorry. Representative Simon, I actually just yeah. And we are also limiting time here to just, you know, have the approach of giving fair. And Representative Simon, I know you're always well spoken anyway, so I'm sure. Why don't you just go ahead and proceed?
Thank you. May I ask, Madam Chair, how much time are you allotting for each side? I don't want to hog up. There might be others who want to speak, so I certainly don't want to take more time than is necessary.
Well, since it's a more limited number of testifiers, I think 5 minutes each would probably do it.
I'll try. Thank you.
Okay. I don't know what you have prepared or what you're looking at. We have talked about 30 minutes each, but
thank you.
We thought there might be more.
Madam Chair, I appreciate your efforts here and the committee's efforts. Thanks for releasing
this. Could you pull
the
microphone in?
Sure. Thank you for releasing the amendment in advance of the hearing. I think that, that was helpful and respectful of you. I do have concerns, obviously, and I'm not going to pretend that I support the proposal. Obviously, I don't. But I do think if it's going to be in our Minnesota Constitution, which, of course, on the merits I oppose, I do have some concerns about just the wording of the bill, since, let's face it, there's a chance that this is going to actually be in our founding document. And so in the tradition of kind of, or in order to make sure that we're thinking about this in a respectful, kind of reverent, solemn way. This isn't any old conference committee on any old bill. This is our founding document. We ought to treat it with that reverence. Mm-hmm. I want to just point out a couple of concerns that I have about the language. Again, understanding we disagree on the substance, this is just in terms of what version. I guess the first concern that I would enunciate has to do with the phrase government issued. And I know that Senator Howe and others prevailed in the Senate, at least momentarily, on an amendment that would have broadened that. It had language that indicated that government issued or its equivalent or equivalent or something to that effect. If this amendment is adopted here, it sounds like that will be gone, and I think that's too bad because it sets up sort of a two-tiered system, particularly as pertains to institutions of higher learning, where you'll have a student at the U of M or St. Cloud State, presumably, or at least potentially, being able to show their identification, but a student at Gustavus or St. Thomas not being able to do that, unless somehow, in a way that I can't perceive of right now, that would be determined a government-issued ID. It might be government-approved. We tried that amendment on the House floor. It was not accepted. So that would have been a way to create an umbrella term that would have embraced more than just government-issued. Then there's the issue of what government means. Government, presumably, as Representative Kiffmeyer, Madam Chair, you indicated on the floor of the House during the debate, it could mean a state of Iowa driver's license or a state of Maine driver's license. Less clear is whether it could include a Kenyan driver's license or a Saudi Arabian driver's license. We just don't know that yet. So that's a concern I have, is that whole issue of government issued. The second concern, of course, is the adding back of the term identity. I noticed that in the engrossment that was on the House floor, and this is the language in line 1.23 of Senator Newman's amendment. It said substantially equivalent eligibility verification. An old engrossment had said identity and eligibility. It was pulled out on the House floor, and now it's being inserted back in. That provision, or that word identity, had given a lot of us pause, and I thought that Representative Kiffmeyer had wisely gotten rid of it, because I think one valid possible interpretation of that language is that if you say that all voters, including those not voting in person, must be subject to substantially equivalent identity and eligibility verification, then it might just end absentee voting by mail. I think that's a plausible interpretation. Others here might disagree, but I think it is certainly one plausible interpretation, and I'll leave that to you as the authors or those voting on this to say, I hope on the record, whether you think that's the case or that's your intention or not. The third issue has to do with this business of substantially equivalent and what that means. It sounds like a term that is in the eye of the beholder. Obviously, if this were in statute, I'd have less of a concern, because there are other places in statute where that might have been used or something similar to that might have been used. But because it's a constitutional provision, I fear that we're sort of hemmed in by this language, which leads me to the next point, and probably the most important point, and this was a focus of the debate on the House floor, so Senators, this may be new to you, I presume. I didn't watch the Senate debate, so you can tell me if this is new. My concern with this language in Senator Newman's proposed amendment here, which is very much like the House language in this respect, is that there is not the room that I think proponents think there is for legislative discretion. And we may just have and I think courts are going to end up deciding this, assuming for a moment that this becomes part of the Constitution. Here's what I mean. On line 1.21, there's the phrase, what I called on the House floor debate, the magic words, which say, in the manner provided by law. That's pretty clear to me anyway, and I think to most judges it will be clear that as to that provision, as to that sentence starting on line 1.20, the phrase in the manner provided law by law represents sort of magic words that gives us in the legislature the power, were this to pass, to come back in 2013 and flesh out in statute, in law, what this means. So when it says that certification shall be a matter of the manner provided by law, that means we can define certification any way we want in January of 2013. We can say certification means you sign an affidavit on site. It can mean you have to go to your county auditor in a week, which was one of the legislative proposals last year, that within a certain number of days you have to come back and produce identification. We can define it any way we want, and I'm comfortable with that. I'm comfortable that you have set forth your intent that way. What I'm less comfortable about, and what I'm truly not sure about, and is whether we in the legislature, or whoever's back here, if we're all fortunate enough to be back here next January, will have discretion elsewhere in the bill. So the Senate language, as I read it before, that passed off the floor, had those magic words in more than one place. It was in three or four places, if I recall. I don't have the engrossment right now. That gave me more comfort that the stated intent of the proponents would be borne out in the language. In other words, the intent, and I take Representative Kiffmeyer and other proponents at their word, the intent was that we would have vast and wide discretion to come back next year and flesh out certain constitutional terms, or fill in the blanks, if you will, about what some of this stuff means. Because some of these terms aren't defined, and who better to define them but the legislature? But because it's only in one place and not in the others, and those of you who have made these kinds of arguments in court or have heard them, those of you who are lawyers might know that it's a pretty simple canon of statutory construction that says if you put a certain phrase in one place but then consciously do not put it in another, a court can plausibly interpret that as a conscious attempt not to do what you were very conscious about doing elsewhere. In other words, a court might look at this language at line 1.16 to 1.21 and say, well, legislature, when you wanted to be conscious about saying that you had the power, you knew how to do it. And as evidence that you knew how to do it, we're looking at the magic words on line 1.21. You put the phrase in the manner provided by law when you meant it. And we assume that because of its presence somewhere, its absence elsewhere has meaning. It's not just silence. It actually has meaning. So by putting it there and consciously not putting it elsewhere, you're signaling, you're kind of blowing the dog whistle for the court, saying, at least a very plausible interpretation is that you're saying there isn't such discretion. So, for example, what worries me is that a court will look at this in any litigation and might say, well, we know that they have discretion to talk about what certification means for provisional ballots. They use the magic words, but they didn't use it in line 1.16. So we, the court, we don't know what valid means. We don't know what government issued means. We're not even sure what photographic identification means. I use the example on the House floor, not facetiously at all, and I ask the question, though my photo is faded, whether this qualifies. This gets us in and out of the buildings on the Capitol complex. It is government issued. It once had my photo on it before the sun bleached it, and that's a genuine question. But because those magic words aren't there, the court might say, well, wait a minute. You knew what you were talking about, legislature. You knew what you meant, and you said it in line 1.21. Because it's not there elsewhere, we're just going to interpret that as an absence of discretion to go forward. So that's what I fear. That's a long-winded way of saying I don't think we have the discretion that some of the proponents have been arguing we do. And with this formulation, which is very much like the House formulation, I just worry, and I take everyone at their word that they believe and hope for the fact that we have that discretion to come back, but I fear that a court will say that that's not true. I guess the final thing that I would point out, other than a possible typo on line 1.19, not a typo, but I noticed the word valid doesn't accompany government-issued photographic identification where it did in line 1.16. That's something you might want to clean up. But apart from that, I guess the last thing that I would say to you is that I think the ballot question is possibly an invitation for litigation. There's Supreme Court case law most recently in 2006 that basically says, I'm paraphrasing, I don't have the question, I don't have the case in front of me, but it basically says the question can't be an advertisement or an encouragement when it comes to the question. It's got to fairly and comprehensively describe what the amendment actually does. And my worry here is that there's nothing in this question that says, this says, well, voters have to present a valid photo identification to vote. It says nothing about the fact that it's government issued. I think that's a relevant detail that should be part of the question, and I think a court would so find. It also doesn't say anything about there being any such creature as a provisional ballot, which traditionally in 150 years of state history we have not had. And so for the first time, I think, we are introducing a very major concept in Minnesota election law, which is provisional ballots. I think we as a legislature owe it to the people of Minnesota to more accurately and more fully state the question so as to encompass the substance of the entire amendment. This seems shortened, and it seems, frankly, to leave out details that might make the sentences clunkier, and I concede that by putting those details in there, there will be more friction and clunkiness in the sentences and in the prose. But the Supreme Court has basically said, you got to do that. You got to put in sentences and describe the question. It's not an advertisement for a desired outcome. It's got to fairly state the substance of the amendment. And I would submit respectfully that it doesn't do that in those two particulars, but maybe others that others will attest to. So those are the things that I have the problems with. If I had to summarize, though, my number one concern, it would be on legislative discretion. Because the proponents, at least in the House, have said, and I take them at their word, that their intention, at least, is for us to come back in 2013 and fill in some of the blanks. And there are blanks here, I think we would all agree. Terms that could use more defining and so forth. But I predict, at least, and maybe I'll be wrong, I hope I'm wrong, but I predict in looking at this that courts will not take a very favorable view of our latitude here because the magic words are only in one place and not three or four as in the original Senate language. And because if it were so easy for legislative bodies just to fill in constitutional terms, we wouldn't have been arguing for over 200 years on the federal level about certain constitutional disputes. For example, I used on the House floor the example of the Fourth Amendment. We're all protected from unreasonable searches and seizures. Well, we've been fighting about what those words mean in court case after court case for 200 years. If it were as easy as Congress just passing a law and saying, you know what, this is the Federal Definition of Search Act or Definition of Seizure Act, and they just defined the term, just said search as used in the Fourth Amendment means XYZ and seizure means ABC and reasonable for purposes of the Fourth Amendment means 1, 2, 3. If it were that easy, we wouldn't have 200 years of jurisprudence on the Fourth Amendment. You could do that with any constitutional question. The point is that unless you really write in the specific guidance in the statute saying, legislature, here are the magic words, doesn't have to be these magic words, but some magic words that gives us the discretion, I think a court is going to say, you don't get to write those terms. And what that means is, if and when there's litigation, almost done, Madam Chair, if there's legislation, or
about
if
30 seconds.
Okay, thanks. If there's litigation, then this will be court crafted, court created, and that I presume is exactly what the committee and the proponents want to avoid. So I've said my piece. Thank you for your indulgence. I went way over your 5-minute suggestion. I say this with respect. We disagree on the underlying substance, but I'm concerned that if these words are going to be in our founding document, which it's certainly. At least a 50% chance that they will be, I think we've got to get it right.
Thank you, Representative Simon. Appreciate your taking the time this evening. And I've been informed that if we want to add that extra word, present valid, if there's a typo, that we could do that, but that it wasn't essential because the first sentence, we will deal with that. We'll just wait on that. And, you know, Representative Simon, that in the Constitution itself, it is full of places where we've done enactment language, and it hasn't said as provided by law. Not at all, matter of fact, in the whole Article 7. So we'll deal with that. I'm sure we'll have a more vigorous debate on the House floor, and I can repeat my answer to that as well. But tonight I'd really like to get to the testifiers. And so we have next on my list is Sherry Knuth with the League of Women Voters. Okay, we've got about 15 minutes left for the next two testifiers, so.
Good evening.
Not quite sure how long you have, Ms. Knuth.
I will be very brief.
Yeah, and for the tape record, and you'll say your name. You're used to this. All right, thank you.
Thank you for allowing me to testify. I'm Sherry Knuth, and I'm Public Policy Manager for League of Women Voters Minnesota. League of Women Voters grew out of the effort to secure the right to for suffrage for women, and that effort took 70 years. People who began the process did not live to see it come to fruition, and were not many women died without being able to exercise a vote, the right to vote. So the right to vote is very precious to us, and we support the right to vote for all citizens. I have testified another League member in several committees, and I know that you know that the League does oppose this legislation. But and so I'm going to limit my remarks to 2 points tonight. The first is the only other state which has passed a constitutional amendment to require photo identification of voters at the polls is Mississippi. And I'd like to read an exception that was written into the Constitution in Mississippi. An elector living and voting in a state-licensed care facility shall not be required to show a government-issued photo identification before being allowed to vote. We believe that it is important to have some exceptions in this proposed amendment because there are people in our society who have faced much greater barriers in obtaining appropriate photo identification. The second point I would like to make is related to the education that's required when a photo identification is put into law. And specifically, I raise that concern in regard to the enabling or the effective date in the proposed legislation, which is that the constitutional amendment would be effective, the first election would be in November 2013. And this does not allow adequate time for both voter and election judge education. I think I understand there's Representative Simon raised some concerns about the enabling legislation, but my understanding based on the hearings I've heard is that enabling legislation would be passed, put together in the 2013 session. And as we all know, that may not happen until late in the session, and that would allow only a few months between the passage of that legislation and the first election to educate both election judges as to the new procedures and particularly voters. And in other states that have enacted new voter ID legislation, the courts have been very really scrutinized the level of education, the time for education that is allowed and that is funded, because otherwise it does impinge on the right to vote. And so I would urge the committee to change the effective date of the amendment 1 year later to allow adequate time for voter education. And I'd just like to point out that one thing that's really different with this kind of an education campaign versus like a campaign on for a candidate or something is that this really has to be designed and have time to reach the people who are hard to reach, people who don't pay as much attention to the media, who may not have some of the skills on the internet and that kind of thing to find out requirements. So the education effort really needs to be very in-depth and have enough time to reach all voters. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Knuth. I appreciate your taking the time to come here this evening. And just to mention, usually constitutional amendments take effect immediately. In this particular case, the legislative intent was to give, actually it'll be almost a year from the time the voters would pass it to when it would be used in the first election. So I think the legislature is working very hard on that. Next testifier is Beth Fraser. Welcome, Ms. Fraser.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Beth Fraser from the Office of the Secretary of State. Thank you for taking my testimony. I wanted to just express that our office continues to have questions about the language. There are lots of things that are unanswered and grave concerns about the potential impact of this proposed constitutional amendment were it to pass. We believe that the language in the amendment is actually worse than the language in either of the previous bills that I think went into the conference committee. And we're disappointed that it still has the language related to eligibility verification, and believe that that will end same-day registration as we know it in Minnesota, that voters will no longer be able to go in and register and vote on the same day, because there's no way to verify their eligibility while they're standing there in a substantially equivalent way to that for pre-registered voters. We also believe that the language, what makes this amendment worse, or this proposal worse, is the addition of identity, as Representative Simon discussed. This was part of the bill originally as introduced and then was taken out, we thought wisely. But requiring that all voters, including those not voting in person, be subject to substantially equivalent identity verification is going to have a huge impact on absentee and mail ballot voters. That's 195,000 voters who vote absentee by mail in a presidential election year, 11,500 military and overseas voters, and 45,000 voters who are registered in mail ballot precincts. I don't understand how a person who's overseas or in a nursing home or in rural Minnesota where their ballot is mailed to them, how they could possibly verify their identity in a substantially equivalent way to somebody who's going in and handing somebody an ID where you can look at them and look at their picture. I just don't understand how it's possible. And so we have grave concerns about the impact on absentee voting by mail and mail balloting. We also have concerns that it continues to say that all voters must be subject to these substantially equivalent verification. Once all voters is in the Constitution, it's not going to be possible to make exceptions for people in nursing homes or people in other circumstances. All voters will have to continue to mean all voters. So we believe that the constitutional amendment, if passed, would impact nearly a million voters, more than 500,000 Election Day registrants, 250,000 mail ballot and those who vote absentee by mail, and 215,000 Minnesotans who don't have a current and valid Minnesota driver's license or state ID card number. So thank you for the opportunity to testify. I'd encourage you not to adopt this amendment. Thank you.
Ms. Fraser, I just have a question for you. Is there any way that you would support a photo ID constitutional amendment?
Madam Chair and members, there is not. I would not support a photo ID constitutional amendment, but I think this is not a photo ID constitutional amendment. This is so much more than that. And the language related to substantially equivalent verification goes beyond any proposal I've seen in any other state and will have serious repercussions for Minnesotans and Minnesota voters. So I think it's a misnomer to call this a photo ID amendment, because it's really an amendment that's going to completely overhaul Minnesota's election system.
Thank you, Ms. Fraser.
Thank you.
One of the things, just for folks to know, we currently do eligibility verification already in Minnesota. So I'm a little bit puzzled as to why that might be construed as a new thing. The question is, when it's done, to give equal treatment to all the voters, to make sure that those who are pre-registered and those who register to vote on Election Day. And so, and also, some people out there might be listening to this may not be aware that there's a witness signature already required on absentee ballots. So there's a lot of similarities already in knowing how the process works. So I'm just a little surprised at that. Nonetheless, we'll proceed to our other testifiers. Senator Howe. Welcome, Senator Howe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's great to be here, and I am testifying as a proponent of the voter ID. I've got a couple of concerns with the language of this this amendment. One, where it says valid on 1.16, and I'm not sure what the definition of valid is, but I would guess that it would incorporate an expiration date and possibly an address. But it doesn't look like that is determined there. And then, as you know, I did offer an amendment on the Senate side that had two words, or equivalent. And I know some people viewed that as a less than, and I consider it as a more than. I think photographic identification is a high standard, very high standard, and equivalent means it's got to be at least at that standard. But I think one of the reasons I presented that is I think that what you have in this language is it says government issued. And I think it's going to face a very tough test when it comes to the constitutionality of it, because I think you're going to be treating voters in a similar class differently. And what I mean by that is this language would seem to infer that state or public colleges, universities, or vocational schools, their IDs would be accepted, but private equivalents would not be accepted. And I think that I think poses a some difficulty under the Constitution. The other area that I'd ask you to maybe consider is when it comes to government-issued photo identification, I think it really should say United States, tribal, located within the borders of Minnesota, or Minnesota government-issued photo identification. I think it leaves some room for interpretation exactly, you know, I suppose we could speak to the legislative intent of what we mean by government, but there's certainly a lot of forms of government. It doesn't seem to propose that another state could issue an ID that would be valid under these conditions. So you might have a liberal state somewhere that says we're going to provide IDs for somebody. Just a thought. And I also have concerns that this lacks some enabling legislation. You know, I think as legislators, it's incumbent upon us to know what the end game is going to look like here. And we are not advocating, we don't have enabling legislation on this. So we're going to leave it up to some future legislators to decide how to implement this. Now, we all hope that we're going to be back to determine what that is, but we very well may not. And once the enabling legislation is passed by both the House and the Senate, it's going to require the signature of the governor. Or it could be vetoed by the governor. And I think we're going to run into some issues there. And so just as a final and closing, I'm concerned that we limit it to photographic identification. You know, I think as technology advances, so should our ability under the Minnesota Constitution. I can't imagine our framers putting our framers of our United States Constitution putting a technology into there. You can imagine, did they have any sight or foresight to see where we're at today, to see technology grow, to see computers and the information age that we live in today? And so I think we're just limiting ourselves a little bit by not allowing for that advancement. So I'd strongly encourage this committee to consider some room for advancements in technology, whether it's biometrics, whether it's optical scans, or what have you. And I think we should have that. And I just appreciate having the opportunity to share with you. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator Howe. I appreciate you coming here today. And I know that you're aware, too, that last year there was a statutory bill that I believe you voted for, Senate File 509, that had a lot of what this constitutional amendment is talking about. So I think it might encourage you to take another look at Senate File 509 that you voted for that had a lot of what we're talking about. It is always a challenge to, but I think that the next legislature, which I hope maybe you'll be back to do that, and you'll be a good voice for those things, and in light of the U.S. Supreme Court and the allowances that they have. So I appreciate your being here today, and thank you very much for taking the time.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I did vote for that. I also had my own. I was the chief author of the 479, which Representative Benson also was the chief author on the House side, and I thought that was a very good bill, and one that might have earned the signature from the governor. So, but we'll leave that up for debate on another day. Thank you,
Senator Howe. All right, and our last testifier I have is Mr. Dan McGrath.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Dan McGrath. I'm the Executive Director of Minnesota Majority, here to testify in favor of the photo ID amendment. Just been kind of taking some notes on some of the comments that people have been making today. I'm going to try to respond to some of them. when it comes to concerns about substantially equivalent identity verification, I don't have any concerns with that at all. I think that's the constitutional standard. I think we have to do that in order to be fair and treat all voters as equally as is possible with the methods they're using. That's a fundamental principle of our all good government, of our United States Constitution, our Minnesota Constitution, is fairness and equality. So that's what that's getting at, and I don't see any danger of courts misconstruing the intent of substantially equivalent. So I think that's excellent language. I wouldn't change a word of it. Representative Simon had concerns about the language as prescribed by law being included in one place in the amendment and not all-encompassing throughout it. But I would point out that our current election law consists of 13 chapters and hundreds of rules that have been promulgated by the Secretary of State's office and others. But it is all based on one paragraph in the Constitution. And I'll grant you that it does say in there in one place, shall be prescribed by law, but it refers to only one part. It doesn't refer to who is an eligible voter, how we determine who an eligible voter is, who what does the word entitled mean? What does permitted mean? Well, we could parse this out with the Constitution as it is currently worded, but yet somehow the legislature and the Secretary of State's office has managed to muddle through and create legislation to enact what is already in the Constitution. So I really don't see any problem with that. Another example, the Second Amendment is one sentence. And it boggles the mind to consider how many laws have been propagated governing the purchase, ownership, and carrying of firearms. So I don't think it's a realistic consideration for this amendment. Some people want to insert exceptions for people in certain circumstances to the law. And that gets back again to equal treatment under the law. I think putting in exceptions, even if they're feel-good exceptions, into the Constitution this way could create a constitutional problem as far as equal protection. Licensed care facilities or, you know, whatever like that. Exceptions are not good from a constitutional perspective. The objective should always be treat all voters as substantially the same as is possible with the methods that we're using. I've been just this morning, a Minnesota majority participated in a press conference with the coalition of voter ID supporters and called out the Office of the Secretary of State for promoting what we consider to be misinformation. It's been very frustrating to us hearing this notion being pushed that this will somehow interfere with the ability of people to cast absentee ballots or that it will end Election Day registration. Numerous lawyers have examined this. No one has come to the conclusion, except for the Office of the Secretary of State, that this is going to interfere with or end Election Day registration. It will end vouching, which I think is what Minnesota wants to see happen. But Election Day registration will continue just as it always has. Provisional ballots will be added into the mix, but it's not a huge problem. It's not 500,000 provisional ballots. That hasn't happened in any of the 44 other states that have provisional ballots in their law or in their constitution. The states that have implemented strict voter ID laws, like Indiana, have a small number of provisional ballots cast. Indiana in 2008 had less than 4,000 provisional ballots for the entire state for the election. Superimpose that onto Minnesota, where we have just over 4,000 voting precincts, and we're talking about less than one provisional ballot per precinct as a likely outcome of this. And it's not going to cause significant delays in reporting election results. The only way that provisional ballots would ever delay reporting election results is if the election was so close that an automatic recount was triggered by state law anyway. So, again, not really a realistic problem. The misinformation has been frustrating, but I'm going to keep trying to get the truth out, and I know that the members on this committee understand what this amendment will actually accomplish. This is more than a photo ID amendment. It definitely is. I would consider this an election integrity and fairness amendment that is absolutely necessary for the state of Minnesota. There's some discussion about what does valid mean as far as valid government-issued photographic identification. I think everybody understands instinctively what valid means. Yeah, it's not expired. It's not fraudulent. The same standards that would be applied by police officers, when they look at your driver's license, is it valid? If it's not, you're going to be in trouble if you're driving around presenting an invalid driver's license. The Senator Howe's idea about inserting or equivalent into this amendment regarding government-issued photographic identification or equivalent, I understand what he's trying to get at, and I appreciate it. There may be a way to go about crafting some language to get to this point, but I think just or equivalent is not ready for prime time. It's not ready to come out of the oven yet. It could be too widely construed. It could be government issued or equivalent, photographic or equivalent. I would strongly recommend this committee not take that language at this point. And the Constitution, contrary to what Representative Simon has been saying, is not indelible ink. If it was, what are we doing here today? Why are we even talking about amending the Constitution if it's impossible to do? Clearly it's possible. So if some future technology comes along, this gee whiz, we got to get this right away, I don't think it will be difficult to amend the Constitution to accommodate that technology at the time. So with that, I'll conclude my remarks. I'll be happy to take any questions from members.
Thank you, Mr. McGrath.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here. Appreciate your taking the time this evening, as everybody has. We appreciate that very much. And I know that we as legislators intend for this language, and that's why substantially equivalent is so important, that we are able to make sure that in those various ways that we need to be flexible, that we are able to be flexible with this language while preserving some equal treatment. I would say the main thing that we want to have here, the courts do not say you have to have a particular kind of ID. The point is that the photo ID is required. At any rate, members, having that, I know I have one request, and I was wondering if, Ms. Fraser, if you wouldn't mind coming back. We had a question about your numbers and just kind of went through them there, and I wanted to be sure we went through all our testifiers first and then had an opportunity to maybe come back to that if there was information. So would you like to go ahead and ask your question? I just wanted you to go through those numbers one more time, and then we have questions about that. Or would you like to start, Representative?
Well, thank you, Ma'am. That actually was my first question as well, was if she could just repeat
those numbers
in terms of the folks that the Secretary of State is claiming wouldn't be able to vote, in direct contrast to the evidence in other states. I was just curious. You had a very large number that I think totaled 1 million voters somehow.
Nearly 1 million. And again, this proposal is very different than proposals passed in any other state. Especially related to the substantially equivalent language. So the numbers, Representative Downey and Madam Chair, are that there are more than 500,000 voters who typically do same-day registration in a presidential election year, and we believe that they would no longer be able to come in and vote and or come in and register and vote on the same day. Instead, they would have to cast a provisional ballot so that their eligibility could be verified prior to it being counted. There are more than 250,000 people who vote by mail in a presidential election year. That's 195,000 people who cast absentee ballots by mail, 11,500 military and overseas voters, and there are 45,000 registered voters in mail ballot precincts throughout the state.
Can you give me those numbers again? I heard mail balloting. Oh, I see. You're combining 195 and 45 into 250? Okay.
Yes, and 11,500.
I had it down as 250 and then another 195 and 45.
No,
okay.
That's right.
All right, got it.
And then 215,000 registered voters who, through a comparison of the statewide voter registration system and the Division of Vehicle Services database, we have identified as either not having any Minnesota driver's license or state ID card, or having one with an address different than the address at which they're registered.
Yeah, Ms. Fraser, could you divide up that number of 215,000? You gave two groups there like you did the 250. Could you divide out the 215?
Yes, 84,000 who, as far as we could tell, did not have a Minnesota driver's license or state ID card, and 132,000 who are registered in an address that's different than that at which is on their driver's license.
Just one other question on that list of 84,000. You have the names and addresses of the people, the 84,000 that you said currently don't have an ID. You have their name and address?
Madam Chair, we do.
Okay, thank you. Representative Downey?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not sure if we want to go too deep into this, but I struggle to find any place in this bill or the language that we've that we're contemplating adding to the Constitution that would eliminate same-day registration. In my mind, same-day registration works 100 times better than it does today if you walk in and have a photo ID. So in my mind, same-day registration is enhanced. Same thing with the absentee military and mailbag. I struggle to see where anything in here would preclude that unless you're already making these court ruling leaps on the interpretation of the equivalent identity and eligibility. And then the other items about not having a driver's license, people who have a driver's license but are registered at different addresses, in my mind, the photo ID situation resolves all of that. In fact, I'm remembering when the Secretary of State testified before our State Government Finance Committee, indicated that actually of those 84,000 who don't have a driver's license, maybe over half of those actually still have a photo ID or a photo identifying them in the Department of Motor Vehicles system. They just haven't renewed their driver's license. Maybe they're seniors and they don't drive anymore and the like. So in contrast to this huge story that you're spinning about there literally being hundreds of thousands of people, frankly, I think the photo ID, as we're contemplating it, actually eliminates all of that. And you could actually argue based on your own numbers and the Secretary of State's numbers that there's only 40,000 registered voters in the state of Minnesota who don't currently have a photo ID available from within the Department of Motor Vehicles. And so these wild numbers, I mean, just off the charts numbers that don't jive with any experience in any other state under a photo ID requirement, boy, they really don't hold up underwater, and I think they warrant some additional investigation, and we don't need to go deep into them tonight, but boy, that doesn't have much credibility in my mind when I actually look at the language of the bill that we have before us. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Downey. I think one of the things, too, about that 500,000 that come in on same-day registration, when I worked as an election judge, a large number of those had an ID. It was those who vouched. But those were a much smaller number of that 500,000, much smaller number that you're dealing with. So I think that's a little bit puzzling to me as well.
Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Fraser. Would you like to make a comment?
Yes. I mean, the issue with the same-day registrants, Madam Chair and members, is not whether or not they have a photo ID, because as you said, you know, over 75% of people register using a driver's license, either with a utility bill or with the current address. The issue is not whether or not they have a photo ID. The issue is the language related to substantial equivalent eligibility verification and the need to run checks against all of the different databases that we run checks against. And if somebody comes in on election day, we run those checks after the fact, as you know. But if the Constitution requires that those checks be run before their ballot can be cast or counted, they will have to vote provisionally. There won't be a choice. And so this is a very different proposal than what's been done in other states. I think it's a misnomer to call it a photo ID proposal. And it's not a fair comparison to compare it to other states, because nobody has done this.
Ms. Fraser, I know, and we're also a state that it does have same-day registration, and so that is really important that we give equal treatment to those who pre-register and those who register to vote on Election Day. But if I recall right, Secretary of State has been talking about an electronic roster, and I think one of the discussions he had was how easy it would be to have the Department of Public Safety with all of their information with storage these days. I see that as a very doable situation to partner this photo ID with an electronic roster where you can have that data information available there in the polling place. We also talked about it in Senate File 509, House File 210, where there can be paper lists of those who do that. I think there are some things that you do, but I think the realization that when you get an ID, there are other things that are accomplished just through the fact that they have the ID and it's in their possession. That accomplishes a lot. I think our focus here is really those who are being vouched for. That currently is causing a great deal of questions about the integrity of the Minnesota's voter registration part of the system, and that the whole vouching, the return postal verification card. So I think the rest of those folks in large cases, but we can have a genuine disagreement about that, and we understand that and appreciate that from you. And
but Madam
Ms.
Chair,
Fraser, you'd like to?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, as you know, under the Help America Vote Act, we not only need to check the driver's license database, we also in certain cases need to check the Social Security Administration database, and there's no way to have that on a laptop in every polling place. We also do checks against a variety of other databases, including those from the Department of Corrections, from the courts. I mean, it's not possible to have all that data in the polling place. So,
well, Ms. Fraser, I appreciate that. I see a much brighter future than it seems as though you are at this time, but I appreciate
Thank
your coming
you.
To testify and expressing you and the Secretary of State's views here. Okay. All right. We've had all of our testifiers at this time. We have an amendment. We have language in front of us at this time. So, Senator Newman, you were going to make a motion, as you had discussed before.
Yeah, Representative Kiffmeyer, I would at this time I would move the A30 amendment.
Okay, Senator Newman moves the A30 amendment. Did we want to do the second, Senator Daley? Did you have something? I didn't want to rush you at all.
I'm not sure where we're going with the entire conversation, but with respect to absentee balloting and not in-person balloting, I just wanted to say very briefly that I've been on active duty and in the Army Reserve on continuous service since 1984, and as a former company commander and military leader, I'd say on its face, providing proof of identification is not burdensome. There's a protocol. We do it for other purposes, and we can easily do it for this.
Thank you, Senator Daley. Being the wife of a Vietnam vet and all of the identity things, it's such a big issue in the military. It seems like that is probably the one area that is least of our concerns in regards to it. I think giving them that credit where credit is due is very important. So thank you for saying that, Senator Newman.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. There's just a couple of comments I want to follow up with regarding some of the testifiers have mentioned. And, you know, specifically I want to talk a little bit about legislative intent. That is something that Representative Simon brought up. It was brought up by the League of Women Voters and then again by the Secretary of State's office. And so that we can be very, very clear, it is our intent to eliminate the vouching system, and I think that that is a system that is just rife with abuse. But irrespective of the unfortunate arguments that the Secretary of State's Ritchie's office has been making regarding provisional balloting and same-day registration, I just have to say that those claims are just patently inaccurate. I have repeatedly in every committee that we have appeared with this bill, Secretary of State Ritchie's office has repeatedly said that we are going to eliminate same-day registration with this bill. And that simply is not true. What we are going to do is we are going to eliminate the vouching system and replace it with a provisional balloting system. Now, these numbers that the Secretary of State's office came up with, I absolutely don't believe that they are accurate. And by way of comparison, in reading the Crawford case that I think everybody on this committee is familiar with, the trial judge in that case found that approximately 1% of the eligible voters in Indiana that were being involved in the Indiana statute did not have a current valid identification that they would be able to present. And in that case, then Justice Stevens went on to talk about, you know, at the U.S. Supreme Court level, the fact that we have two different groups of voters, and 99% of those voters are going to show up in the polling place and vote, and they will not have any difficulty in voting. But there is a small percentage of voters that are not going to have the necessary identification. And the way he believed, Justice Stevens believed, that we solved the problem is with provisional balloting. And he went on to specifically state that provisional balloting is fine so long as the requirements to see that your vote is certified and counted properly is not overly burdensome. There was some comment about you know, alluding to the fact that we are somehow going to be discriminating against voters who are absentee voters, overseas voters, mail-in voters, and here again, there is nothing in this bill that prevents folks from voting either absentee. There's nothing here that prevents folks from using a mail-in system. There's frankly nothing in this bill that says, as Senator Howe alluded to, that we have to provide for future technology. There's nothing in this bill that requires future technology or technology for that matter other than the photo ID. So it is my belief that there is sufficient interpretation that would be allowed for the future legislature to enact and enable this bill so that we carry out what I would term as voter integrity. And if I go back to the Crawford case, Justice Stevens specifically talked about three reasons why the state has an interest in this type of legislation. And he said, number one, we should modernize our system. And if we modernize our system, we will eliminate voter fraud, which he classified as a matter of historical fact in the United States. And if we eliminate voter fraud, we will then in turn encourage more and more voters to participate in the democratic process because they will have greater faith in the integrity of our system. So what I expect to see with this bill is greater participation by the voters. We're going to have greater numbers of people voting, and they will have a greater amount of faith in the election system. So, you know, unfortunately, you know, as we moved through this process, we have had many, many folks come in and testify as to why we can't do this or we shouldn't do this, many, many naysayers. But at the bottom of the end of the day, what we're trying to do is improve the integrity of our election system. And as a state, we not only have a right to do that, we have a responsibility to do that. And that is why I am supporting this bill.
Senator Thompson.
Madam Chair and members, thank you. I really appreciate the efforts that have been put in by all the conferees. And I think it's important to point out that as we've gone through this process that started a week and a half ago when this bill was passed out of the Senate, our intent has been to be mindful of the Crawford case and two issues. And that is that, as Senator Newman stated, the state has a legitimate interest in guarding the integrity of the voting system and the perception of integrity within the voting system, while at the same time making sure we craft this legislation in such a way that it is not burdensome to those who choose to participate and vote. And I know that a lot of attention has been paid to that, and I believe that we've worked something out that complies as best we can, and our intent has been from the moment we started this process to make sure that we are in line with what the courts have said needs to be done in order to accomplish those two things: protect the integrity of the voting system and provide that there is no burden on those who want to vote.
Thank you, Senator Thompson. Well, it is a it is very important. That is very much. Senator Newman, I know you and I have probably read through Crawford many, many times, and the footnotes and all of those things, because they are very important to us, and that is the United States Supreme Court. I thought it was interesting that in another court, there was another situation where this huge, large, garish number was put forward, and Judge Barker threw out that number. I think it was something like 989,000, kind of a similar situation. And she brought it back down to about 43,000. And again, going through that same measure as you did, Representative Downey, just kind of doing that, and found that that large garish number was methodologically flawed, did not have sound basis for it, matter of fact, could not find any foundation in it, and very questionable, and made assumptions that were way beyond, you know, kind of those things that I think we find with normal experience. That's really important. And I think when you do look at this, I think there are large numbers of voters who do express their lack of public confidence. We got the counting down and the recounting, but I think the who gets a ballot and the voter registration part of that with the vouching and other things give very, very serious concerns to our Minnesota people. And they're expressing that to us. Contrary to that, in other states where we've heard some of the same concerns and questions about disenfranchisement, in those court cases, there's not one documented case where someone was in that situation. And I think we have that, whereas in Minnesota, we do have documented cases of disenfranchisement by fraud and very questionable issues. Those are real, and they are valid, and they're right here in Minnesota. And the U.S. Supreme Court said those are valid to be concerned. But of preeminent importance was that public confidence, so we have public participation in the process. So I think that is the absolute intent. Every eligible voter able to vote, the courts have recognized that the normal, as they call it, the vagaries of life have some burdens. I've seen mothers with three little children come to vote. I've seen teenagers, 18 years old, get out from school classes and just walk a block down. I've seen seniors that come in on their walkers, and they're so proud to come in and vote. And I've seen many people want to show their ID. They want people to know. People who are new citizens are proud to show that they are entitled to vote. And I think we underestimate our Minnesota people and their desire to have this and their willingness to work with it. I've talked to another Secretary of State in another state, and it was refreshing. As he went out and worked to help get people photo IDs, he worked with AARP, Catholic Charities, Lutheran Social Services. He worked with the Social Services Department in the counties, traveled the state. And they had a Secretary of State who was actively out there trying to help people, not fight back and be almost really dragging the feet, you might say. And it was refreshing to hear that Secretary of State and see how it is. And if we don't have a Secretary of State who is willing to do that, I know we have state legislators are willing to do that. We have state senators are willing to do that. We will work with our military people, our absentee voters, and our male voters, and I think, and female voters, I meant mail-in voters, not M-A-L-E. And so I have no question about it that we're going to have an army of people out there. I know I've heard from folks who said, I'll put out my home phone number, my cell phone number, call me, I'll come give you a ride, I'll help you. We have a desire for every single eligible voter. There are many, many organizations. Matter of fact, in Minnesota, we just about have an organization for everything you can think of. I've always just been amazed by that. And the power of them and their willingness to do this, the Association of Townships, the Association of Minnesota Counties, our League of Minnesota Cities, I know that they will be, when the people have spoken in this constitutional amendment, that we will be able to have a very strong effort to make sure that every eligible voter, if they have a need of this ID, will be able to get one and be able to vote as they're entitled to do so. So with that, Senator Newman, I'll renew your motion to adopt. And there is one word that we do need to our reviser folks who tell us this on line 1.32 between the word state and provide, to insert the word to.
I would, Madam Chair, I would incorporate
that. Just a grammatical thing here that as long as we're doing this, we have that ready to go. And with that, I'll renew your motion, Senator Newman, that we adopt 2738A30.
So moved.
So moved. All right. Do we need to do a roll call on this? Or a voice vote? I don't know. Sometimes we have. Okay. We'll have a roll call vote, and so will the administrator for this evening. Please call the roll. All right. Mr. Reynolds? All right.
Representative Kiffmeyer?
Aye.
Representative Drazkowski?
Aye.
Representative Benson?
Aye.
Representative Downey?
Aye.
Representative Anderson? Senator Newman?
Yes.
Senator Thompson?
Aye.
Senator Daley?
Aye.
Senator Limmer?
We have two folks who are in other committees. Would we like to, I know that we have the majority to pass this amendment, but
just for the record, Senator Lilly, who's not present.
All right. Oh, right. Okay. I just want to defer to the
seven ayes and zero nays. It passes.
Seven ayes and zero nays. It passes. And the amendment is adopted.
You need to move the bill. One second.
All right. We just have some procedural things here that we'll just give time for. No, we're going to. Oh, no, they can sign. They don't have to sign it tonight. Report can be signed in between and the Senate. And so we can have Mr. Reynolds walk to them. I think they're in the building. They're just going to the committee.
No, Lilly is.
Oh, he's ill.
He's ill.
Senator Lilly has excused them because he's ill tonight, just to make that for the official record. Okay. All right. We're busy night, so we have members in other committees where they're needed. And so we will proceed. Senator Newman, I'm informed that we just need to have a specific motion to adopt the official committee report, conference committee report.
It's so moved, Madam Chair.
As moved. Anything else I need to that takes care of it? Okay. Mr. Okay, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Let the record show there's no opposition. All right. Thank you very much. Does that conclude our official business? There will be an official conference committee report for signatures as usual. So members, please stay attuned to that. Any of you who can stick around and we can take care of that. Otherwise, can be done later. But if you wish to do so, I know there's other things. Senator Lilly is ill tonight and wasn't able to be here, so he'll have to do that at a different time. Okay, we just need to hold just a second before we adjourn. All right. Senator Newman, our business having concluded, this conference committee on House File 2738 is adjourned.